The Workmen's Compensation Bureau, where the company wanted the existing cases heard, had a 5-month statute of limitations in New Jersey. Marguerite, who had filed suit about 13 months after she'd left USRC, was thus going through the federal court, which had a more generous 2-year statute. Well, that was well matched for Marguerite, for she'd stayed with the company long after the other girls had left, so when she first became ill, she was still an employee. But Quinta hadn't worked for the firm since February 1919. She was now trying to start a lawsuit more than 6 years later. 4 years too late, according to the law, even though her symptoms hadn't started until 1923, and she hadn't received a diagnosis of radium poisoning until a few weeks ago. But the law cared nothing for the fact that this brand new disease took several years to manifest. The law was the law, and it said neither Grace, nor Quinta, nor Catherine had any recourse to justice, or, at least, that was the interpretation of Isidore Kalich. It fell to Quinta to tell the others what he'd said. Nothing could be done. It was galling news for them all. "When I realise," said Grace Fryer, "that I am paying for something that someone else is to blame for." Grace now tried another lawyer, Henry Gottfried, with whom she'd already had some dealings, but Gottfried told her that the case would take considerable money to develop. He said he could do nothing for her unless she gave him cash up front. "But I had no money," remembered Grace in frustration, "for I was compelled constantly to attend doctors. I felt very badly, yet lawyers did not seem to be interested in the matter without a fee." Part of the reluctance of attorneys to take the case was undoubtedly due to the power of the United States Radium Corporation. For not only were the legal issues potentially insurmountable, but the girl's opponent in court would be a hugely wealthy, well-connected company with government contacts and the financial resources to eke out the fight for as long as it took. Said Catherine Sharp, "Each of the attorneys to whom I appealed felt that it was hopeless to try to collect damages from the radium company." Another problem, too, was just how new the disease was. Given the longevity of the radium therapeutics industry, could it really be true that radium had hurt the girls? Perhaps, as Rhoda had said, the girls were trying to palm off something on the firm. Now the effects of the company's suppression of the drinker report really made themselves felt. Thanks to that concealment, published studies on the link between radium and the women's illnesses had been available for only a matter of weeks. None of the lawyers had ever heard of radium poisoning. No one knew anything about it. No one, that is, except for Harrison Martland. Martland was in direct contact with the girls over that summer, offering what assistance he could, and one day Catherine Sharp came to his lab to discuss something very important. She had always wanted to write. Well, now she and Martland wrote something together, though its topic was macabre. In time, it would come to have its own name. The List of the Doomed. Martland wrote it out on the back of a blank autopsy report. He sketched out a series of penciled lines to create a neat chart, and then picked up his fountain pen and wrote in flowing black ink on Catherine's direction. 1. Helen Quinlan. 2. Miss Molly Maggia. 3. Miss Irene Rudolph. 4. Mrs. Hazel Couser. 5. Mrs. Mylifer. 6. Miss Marguerite Carlo. The list went on and on.